Hello everybody and welcome to this video, which is kindly sponsored by Squarespace. And today we're going to look at analytics, where you can find out how well your website is doing. So you can see just going to the portal, going to analytics, and here I've gone to traffic. So you can see in this case, the majority of people visiting the website are coming through the direct link, probably from the channel. You can see also that the majority of people are coming in on desktop. There's a fair amount coming in on mobile as well. What kind of browser they're using, what operating systems, and overall visitation levels. Obviously, this is being recorded on the 22nd, so not so many people have arrived this morning. You've also got bounce rates, unique visitor numbers, page views, all that kind of stuff. And then if we go over here, that gives you essentially the same information except in graphical view. And over here in the geography tab, you can see where everybody's coming from, or at least ostensibly where their IP addresses are coming from. No one's coming from Bolivia. I must rectify this. Also, that one person in Chile, that one subscriber over there, I greatly value you. Thank you for putting Chile on the map of people who visited the website. So, someone in Gabon as well. So this is how easy it is to examine how well your website is doing using the tools available in Squarespace. And then you can just go back to the website and check on your page. So if after all these little mini tutorials I've been doing, you think you could build a website for maybe ideally naval history purposes, but you never know, you might want to do it for some other reason, then head over to squarespace.com/Drakenafel. You can get a free trial. And once you're ready, that little link will give you 10% off your first website or domain. So thanks once again to Squarespace for sponsoring the video, and on with the main show. Although SMS Blücher would not enter service with the Kaiserliche Marine until almost the end of the 1900s, her origins lay at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, for in that year the Second Fleet Law was amended to add another 5 large cruisers, or Grosse Kreuzer, to the overseas fleet, and another one to the reserves. These were what would be termed in the English-speaking world armoured cruisers. And at projected build rates, it would leave the fleet with a total of 20 armoured cruisers by the early 1910s. Fast forward to the middle of the decade, and cruisers C and D had just been finalised. These would be the Scharnhorst-class armoured cruisers, faster, better armed and better armoured than their predecessors, but still designed to a budget. Hence, among other things, the casemate-mounted main battery guns amidships instead of turreted units. This would, of course, be followed by cruiser E, and this is the ship that would eventually become Blücher. There were two initial options presented to the Kaiser in spring 1905, option A and option B. A was just a moderate improvement on the Scharnhorsts, adding another pair of 150mm guns to the secondary battery, and using a new, improved model of 210mm main gun without any change in number or position of the main battery. B was much more ambitious, with a dozen 210mm guns in 6 twin turrets in a hexagonal layout, along with 8 single casemate-mounted 150mm guns, the lesser guns all being as per the Scharnhorsts. These two designs would be relabeled as designs E1 and E2, with increased engine power on both being projected to give E1 another half a knot, while E2 would maintain the same speed as the Scharnhorsts, but obviously carry a heavier armament. Both ships would also have just over an inch of extra belt armour for a total thickness of 180mm, or just over 7 inches. However, costs were radically different. There was a 24 million mark budget, but E1 was projected to cost just 23 million, while E2, with a need to build 4 additional twin turrets and all their associated paraphernalia, was projected at no less than 25.6 million marks. Sensing that E1 might not offer enough, and E2 might cost a bit too much, E3 was also sketched quickly. This kept the Scharnhorst's pair of twin turrets, but added an additional set of 210mm casemate guns. A total of 6 casemate main guns, for 3 per side, which gave a 7-gun broadside once you included the turrets. Plus, it also had an extra pair of 150mm guns. Armour on E3 was maintained at 188mm at the maximum, but it was thinned in some other areas apart from directly amidships in order to pay for this maximum thickness while maintaining speed. Initially projected to cost about the 24 million mark budget, E3 was approved to proceed after a cheaper armour contract was arrived at, which dropped the cost down to 23 million from 24. With 1 million marks theoretically available and no particular rush to finish the design that year, And changes, or improvements, depending on how you want to look at them, now began to be made. This led to the Design E5, which returned to the hexagonal layout but used single turrets amidships and twins at either end. This reduced the broadside back down to 6 guns, but theoretically should give wider arcs of fire, and thanks to the amidships' main guns now being in turrets instead of casemates, it would also give them increased range. It was also noted that without the need for casemate ports, the strength of the protection over the hull was greatly increased. But it was found that on the hull constraints of the design, although range was improved because of better elevation, the single turrets actually got somewhat in each other's way, and thus limited arcs of fire were present compared to just using casemates. But E5 was still favoured because the improvement to the ship's defences, thanks to the elimination of the casemates as well as the higher fire rate of the turret guns, was considered to more than offset a slight reduction in ahead and astern fire angles. Interestingly, at this stage, the design for what would eventually become the Nassau class showed pretty much the same layout, with mixed twin and single turrets, just using 11-inch guns instead of the 210mm or 8.3-inch guns which were standard for German armoured cruisers. This similarity helped to reignite a debate that was circulating in the upper echelons of the German Navy, courtesy of the Kaiser. That being, what about a unified ship, where the speed of a cruiser was combined with the power of a battleship? This theoretical type had been resisted in most of the Navy for 3 primary reasons. If armour was sacrificed for armament and speed, then the ship would be vulnerable in a battle line. If the ship had speed, firepower and armour, then it would be hugely expensive and the budget wouldn't be able to afford it. And finally, the fleet laws specified that the fleet should have a certain number of battleships and a certain number of cruisers, with costs predicated on anticipated costs of each type. A unified type would require the whole law to be redrafted and potentially amended downwards, especially if people in the Reichstag perceived that, well, if one ship can do either a cruiser or a battleship's job at will, then clearly you don't need two, you just need the one. While these discussions were ongoing, it was asked if there was perhaps another way to improve the design. Maybe replace the 150mm or 5.9-inch guns with 170mm or 6.7-inch guns. However, the reply came back that for the weight and complexity that would be involved, it would be better to just revisit the 12-gun E2 arrangement or upgrade the 8-gun E5 arrangement from 210mm to 240mm or 9.4-inch guns, that being the same calibre as had been found on some of Germany's smaller, earlier pre-dreadnoughts. And if people were going to persist with this idea of putting cruisers in the line of battle, even if only as substitutes for damaged battleships, it was held that the latter option, the 9.4-inch one, would be somewhat better, as it would at least give them a bit more punch against heavily armoured targets. And then, thrown into the mix, was a letter from the Kaiser, who was out in the Mediterranean having fun aboard various Regia Mariner ships. The relevant part of the letter reads as follows. The commanding officer, that is of the battleship Sardegna, of the Re Umberto class, reported to me that he had drawn the hull lines for the Regia Elena class and guaranteed me 22 knots, which you would probably make somewhat more. When I asked why Italy placed such great emphasis on high speed in battleships, since armoured cruisers were better suited to this task, he replied that the prevailing view was that Italy did not have the money for both battleships and armoured cruisers. Therefore, the decision had been made not to build armoured cruisers, but instead to design the battleships with such good hull lines that they could comfortably maintain high speeds and performed armoured cruiser duties. The statement by the commander of the Sardegna struck me all the more because it almost literally repeated what I've been arguing for years in favour of fast battleships against armoured cruisers. The Regia Elena class is in fact the fast battleship that I wish to see developed in place of the Rune and Sea classes, and which I had been told was unattainable. For the new fleet bill, it would, in my opinion, be very advantageous if one could say, we have enough armoured cruisers, our principal weapon remains the battleship. We will develop it in individual fast types, group them into light divisions, and have them perform cruiser duties as effectively as possible. Such a ship should be chosen at no more than about 13,200 tons, with 6 or 8 28-centimetre guns of 45 calibre length, With 2,800 tons of coal, 20 to 22,000 horsepower, a length of 132 metres, a 250mm thick armour belt, 250 to 220mm of armour on individual 28cm turrets, and 280mm on the larger turrets. These figures are to be regarded as general guidelines formulated solely from the standpoint that the fast battleship, calculated as an armoured cruiser, must in fact be absolutely fit for the line, something that neither the Friedrich Karl class nor the C class is capable of. This threw Naval High Command into a panic, as none of the current designs for Cruiser E came even close to this level of capability, and more to the point, a quick draft plan showed the ship as the Kaiser proposed would probably capsize at the slightest hint of a breeze or a cross-current. However, the Kaiser's only concession on his fast battleship idea was to tell the Navy that, well, if they didn't like his idea, then they had to design one themselves. That would, of course, make costs skyrocket, and so the plan was drafted to split the proposal for new ships, when it was submitted to the Reichstag, into two items. The first would be an amendment that upped the fleet's cruiser numbers, and then once that was passed and made law, the actual costs for those new ships would be listed only when it came to time to pass the budget, which was they needed to fulfil what was now a legally binding obligation. And because the designers clearly didn't have enough work to do already, another version of the cruiser was drawn up. This was E6, essentially an 8-gun, so mixed twin and single turret E3-E5 type, but with the 150mm secondary battery replaced with 170mm guns and a slightly larger hull. This and E7, which was the same size as the earlier designs, seem to have mostly been sacrificial designs, which would allow the Navy to make concessionary changes while perhaps actually getting what they wanted, since they knew that the 170mm and 210mm was so close in size and fire rate that there would be serious concern about it being hard to tell the difference between shell splashes from the different guns when at range. Tirpitz quietly asked if E5 could perhaps be developed into yet another halfway house design, E8, with the forward two amidships single turrets made into twins. But this turned out to be a spectacularly bad idea, as to balance the ship with all this new weight forward, the aft twin turret had to be moved even further back, and that expanded the overall citadel and thus the overall displacement. There also wasn't enough space for the wing twin turrets to actually work on the E5 hull without losing a funnel. All of this meant E5 reverted back to being the Navy's default choice, and it was ordered to be developed further. With the dimensions of the Kiel Canal locks now looming as design limiting factors, it was suggested that if you wanted to maintain 23.5 knots and fit the canal, the overall displacement was probably going to have an upper limit of around 13,300 tons, give or take. Just how tight this limit was is evident from discussions about what would normally be minor things in ship design, like balancing the turrets with the new 210mm gun installed. To add the needed weight to the back of the turret would require, it was decided, thinning the 150mm casement gun shields down to just 20mm. But then that would mean the secondary guns weren't well protected enough. To pay for an additional pair of searchlights, the secondary gun elevation was to be cut. And in terms of the whole ship, there was also worry about how low the belt sat when the ship was fully loaded with coal, since in the relatively short distances of the North Sea, it was possible that the cruiser might then encounter enemies before it could burn off all that much coal and thus raise the belt to a useful height above the waterline, and so a much more heavily loaded coal bunker had to be assumed for the purposes of positioning the armour belt. These and other concerns about the thicknesses of the aft conning tower, the insufficient nature of the turret's barbette armour, perhaps extending the aft of the turret to overhang further back instead of just adding more dead weight, and one rather amusing proposal, which solved the turret balancing issues by just stocking a bunch of ammunition at the back of the turret as a counterweight, were all discussed over the next few weeks. Various different departments all had very different priorities, and then into all of this came the news that Britain was about to ramp up its warship construction and the size of individual large warships. Not only did this mean that Germany would have to build more and larger ships if they wanted to stay relevant, but it would also mean still more money was needed to expand the Kiel Canal to accommodate this new fleet of larger vessels. By September, design policy had shifted entirely. The Kiel Canal would have to be expanded to whatever size was needed, And therefore, ships should be built to the perceived military and technical specifications that were needed, with much less consideration to cost or precise dimensions. This pronouncement resulted in a trio of new designs, E9, 10, and 11. These all included bow armour plating instead of a bow ram stem, a thicker aft conning tower, fully balanced turrets, generally increased coverage of armour, and rotating torpedo tubes, as well as flagship facilities. They would all also now revert to the E2 style layout, featuring a dozen 210mm guns and six twin turrets in a hexagonal layout, with some of the differences between E9, 10, and 11 as follows. E9 and 10 had a longer hull, allowing them to maintain speed with the same power plant as before, whereas E11 kept the same size hull with more displacement and made up for sitting lower in the water by having 2,000 more horsepower instead. E9 and 10 would have roughly the same armour layout as E5 on the external elements, but better internal protection in terms of things like bulkhead thicknesses. E9 and E11 had their main battery turrets in the same place as E5, while E10 moved the wing turrets closer together by cutting the 150mm battery back down to 6 guns. E11 had improved internal subdivision and armour bulkheads in an effort to provide some protection against torpedoes and mines. All of this obviously meant that costs increased, and in ascending order, the costs were projected at 22.25 million marks for E10, 22.5 million marks for E9, and 26.25 million marks for E11. By the end of September 1905, it was decided that E11 would be the basis for Cruiser E going forward, as Cruiser F, which would much later become Von der Tann, was going to switch over to a dozen 280mm or 11-inch guns instead. With the final budget for Cruiser E set at 27.5 million marks, E11 was soon modified into design E15, with minor revisions and a decision to progress with vertical triple expansion engines as opposed to turbines. Tirpitz also asked for options with the 240mm or 9.4-inch gun, mostly just to see if it was possible. This, in turn, led to the parallel development of E17, 18, and 19. E17 had six 240mm guns, a pair of twins, one fore, one aft, and two single turrets, one per side, plus a dozen 150mm casemates. E18 dropped two of the 150mm guns, but made the wing turrets go up from singles to twins, thus increasing the overall main battery to 8 guns with a 6-gun broadside. And E19 also went with 8 main guns, but split the wing turrets into a pair of singles as opposed to a single twin, reducing the 150mm battery again to 8 guns. Only E17 actually came within even the raised budget, and so those ideas were dropped for the moment, but then it was soon time for more variants, E20, 21, 22, and 23. E20 was basically E18, but with two more 150mm guns. E21 moved 8 of E20's 150mm guns into twin turrets instead of casemates, and E22 and E23 used E19 as their basis, with E23 using a similar twin turret setup as E20 for the entire 150mm armament. However, the time and cost of developing 240mm and 150mm twin turrets was considered prohibitive, and in the background, E15 had been worked into E16B. This design introduced a new model of 150mm gun, lengthened the 180mm belt, deleted the 37mm tertiary battery, and slightly reduced the thickness of bow armour in order to allow stern armour to be implemented. The ship was also made a little bit beamier for stability, as well as a bit longer in order to preserve the length to breadth ratio, and the final expected speed was 24 knots. There was a last-minute proposal to revisit the decision on propulsion system and switch from vertical triple expansion engines to turbines, but this was rejected due to it needing about 3 months to actually rework all the plans to make it turbine propelled, and time was at this point now something of the essence. Displacement was revised to 15,500 tons. The funnels were reduced in number but increased in size, with just two large funnels now planned, and one slight final increase in beam for stability and an associated extra 200 tons in weight meant that the final revision was done, and so on the 21st of June 1906, the Kaiser signed the order to construct Cruiser E. But even as the ink dried, the German Navy was already feeling a degree of consternation, for just weeks earlier, at the end of May, news had arrived that the British Invincible class, heretofore thought to be armed with 9.2-inch guns in a uniform battery, would in fact be carrying a 12-inch uniform battery. But it was far, far too late to change Cruiser E in any way that could realistically deal with that. It was briefly considered to perhaps bring in one of the 9.4-inch designs, but it was realised that this design was nowhere near as mature as the one that they had, and up-armouring such a ship to be able to deal with 12-inch gunfire would cause so many design changes as to effectively reset all the design work anyway. And so the Kieler Blücher would be laid down, even though the Germans knew that she'd be outmatched the moment she commissioned. They reasoned she would still be very useful against anything that wasn't one of the new dreadnought armoured cruisers, and so instead, primary design work turned into revising Cruiser F in light of the new revelations, which set the path for von der Tann to move from a roughly invincible-like vessel with a lot of firepower and not a huge amount of armour to something with a bit more protection. Blücher, meanwhile, would enter service just before the decade was out and would famously go on to meet her end at the Battle of Dogger Bank, firing ferociously down to the last, barely more than 5 years after she'd first raised her flag.